We're now ready to hear the second case, Ben-Hur Steel v. Director of Revenue.
May it please the Court. My name is Mark Ellinger, appearing on behalf of Ben-Hur Steelworks. I do have an exhibit I would request be circulated to the Court.
Yes, that's fine.
Provide copies to the Marshal.
Yes, thank you. And I'm sure opposing counsel's got it.
And opposing counsel has been provided a copy in advance. It is an exhibit from the record.
Okay, so. Great.
So Ben-Hur Steelworks is a steel manufacturer located in St. Louis. It is the party to this case, and I want to make sure I start by saying that because there may be some confusion when I read the respondent's brief about another company that is related, which is Ben-Hur Construction Company. Ben-Hur Construction Company is not a party to this case. It is not part of the refund claim. Ben-Hur Steelworks is the manufacturer and has submitted the refund claim. Ben-Hur Steelworks is a, as I said, a steel manufacturer. Its plant is located in LeMay. And this is a copy of exhibit number 4 that I've handed out. It shows a couple of pictures that was submitted in the record in the AHC of their factory. And I think this is important because in light of many of the other manufacturing cases under Section 144.054, it's become very clear that there's a question about what is manufacturing, and I think these pictures are illustrative of that. The first two pictures you see are the initial yard at Ben-Hur Steelworks. This is where raw materials are brought in and deposited. And in the second picture, you can actually see some pictures of raw I-beams laying on the ground. The next couple of pages show the pictures of the interior of the factory. And you can see it is actually a factory. It has a large crane that hauls the large pieces of steel. It has processing and manufacturing machinery. You see this, it's the fourth picture, it's the second picture on the second page. You see a machine that's designed for pressing plates and applying those onto the steel I-beams. The next page shows a system of rollers and conveyors to move that initially processed and manufactured I-beam to the next station. You can see the next picture there shows a cutting and attaching station. And you can actually see a gentleman working on a beam. It sits in a trough, and the machine then is operated to actually allow bolts to be put on and plates to be attached and affixed. The next page shows the next step of processing in some beams, which is the compressing of a plate onto that beam. You can see front and back of that particular machine, and you can see some of the scrap iron that's on the floor after the processing. The reason I think these pictures are important is you're seeing that the raw product, that simple I-beam, is changed in a manufacturing process. And the best example of that is the last picture on the page, which are the final I-beams. You can see there are attachments to them. You can see that they have been welded, they have been cut, they've got grooves cut in them, they have holes cut in them. That raw I-beam is useless as a piece until it is manufactured into what is called a structural steel member. And that's the manufacturing process. This court recently issued its decision in Phoenix. Phoenix is very different because Phoenix, they poured a concrete wall on a construction site, tilted the concrete wall up. In this case, we're taking raw steel beams, creating structural steel members, some of which are sold at retail. In fact, the record reflects that some of those beams are sold at retail to non-related construction companies. We pick them up and haul them off, or the steel is delivered. And sales tax has been collected and remitted on that.
Excuse me, I thought there was something that most of the steel beams, at least, are created for custom, for a particular job, and in fact, if they're not used, they're discarded because they're customized for a particular job.
So Judge said that's two issues there.
Absolutely.
Most of the steel beams are custom built for a specific type of job. So if you need a 12-foot steel beam with a certain number of plates and certain grooves on it, those are custom manufactured. They're not necessarily installed. They're delivered or they're picked up from the factory. In fact, a substantial portion, it's not in the record, but there's a substantial portion of the business that involves those sales that are not installed on the site. And Ben-Hur collects and remits
tax. Is there a general market where people can come in and say, I'm going to say, I want that one, or are things made to order?
There's not a general market where you could come in and say, I need that beam. There is a general market to the extent that you could come in and say, I need that beam cut into this piece. and I need that groove with that plate put on it. And it's a big market. It's a market that consists of hundreds of buyers and numerous sellers. And they all compete in the marketplace. Some of those folks decide to come and pick up your product, in which case we pay sales tax on it. In the actual refund claims that are here, the steel is delivered and installed. But at the factory, steel is complete. It's a product. I can't pick one up because they're a little too heavy for me. But you know,
is there case law that makes a distinction on a custom manufactured product, or even if I go into a dress shop or to a tailor shop and I order a dress made or a jacket made, that finds that is not a service at retail or a product?
You know, I think the closest case when I look at that type of analogy is probably Concord Publishing, which deals with newspaper printing, where the role of newspaper is brought into a printing shop, and the only change that's made to the paper is print is affixed to it and it's cut into pieces. And this court held, and I believe that was in 96, this court held that that's clearly manufacturing and is entitled to an exemption. And yet that newspaper is unique. Only that newspaper company prints that newspaper. You could, if it's the Jefferson City newspaper, you can buy the Jefferson City newspaper, but that's not the New York Times. They're very different products. And the printing is unique to who orders the printing put on the paper. So I think that's probably the closest case that really is a custom type of market for the product. But I think it's important because there are different kinds of markets. And a market doesn't just mean that you have to have multiple people that will buy this notepad.
How's your case any different than the Weber case that was argued here a month or so ago?
Well, the Weber case is a parking lot. And I'm not sure how you can show up to Weber Construction and pick your parking lot up, pay your sales tax, and take it with you. I think that's a big distinction. These steel beams can be picked up and taken, and sales tax can be paid and remitted. If you go to the plant, you see a manufacturing plant. If you go to the parking lot, where it's created on the ground, it's a very different situation.
But we're talking about, it's not just a product, there has to be a market for it. And if market doesn't mean someone bought it, but means a marketplace where people buy and sell, and all the ones that are at issue here are ones that are custom made for a particular client, then how does that meet the definition of market? And that is a similar issue to one of the issues in Weber.
You know, I think that the question occurs, when do you define, is it a market? And I would posit that in the last picture, that's where the product exists. Therefore, you define, is there a market for a product at the end of production?
And what's the market for that product? Isn't it custom made, so it's for one person? It's not.
The product for that is the person that's wishing to buy it and it's custom made for. However, the contract provides that Ben Hur can buy it back. And Ben Hur can buy it back to reprocess it, reuse it, or ultimately it could be used for scrap. In fact, I think this court found that scrapping of car parts to get steel shards is manufacturing. So that shows that there's a market also. The market is different uses for it. But there are multiple buyers and multiple sellers. And I think, and I notice my time is starting to get a little bit shorter, and I apologize for that because there's a lot to talk about here. The fact that there's only one buyer for this particular steel beam doesn't mean there's not a market for the products of steel beams. And in this case, we have structural steel members, and it's a big market. Markets should be broadly defined. A market can be a monopoly, one seller. Obviously, we worry about those before we have antitrust acts. A monopoly, a market could be a monopsony, just a couple of sellers or a couple of buyers. And in a monopsony, you have one buyer. It's still a market by the definition. With the change in the statute by the legislature, 136.300 has changed the construction. And in Phoenix, this court said, we strictly construe market. And that's based upon a long set of case law based on 136.300 that said exemption statutes are strictly construed. That's no longer the law of the land in the state of Missouri, simply because the legislature has expressly changed that statute.
Can you discuss the application of E&B Granite? HC talked about how there, unlike EMB granted, there was no substantial evidence presented that Ben-Hur ever sold a single beam in an ordinary retail transaction. Discuss that if you would.
Absolutely. I think this case is very similar to EMB granite in that EMB granite was a case where you were cutting custom countertops. EMB granite, after cutting the custom countertops, could either deliver them and install them, or people would come and pick them up and install them themselves. And there is testimony in the transcript. I believe most of that testimony is on page 20 of the transcript, where it talks about beams are made, and sometimes they're sold to other companies who come and pick them up, and that sales tax is collected and remitted on those transactions. It's not an extensive record on those sales, but it is clear in the record that there were sales of product that was custom made to other folks that picked them up, took them off, and sales tax was collected and remitted. And the department kind of wants to have it both ways. The company comes in and picks it up and drives off with it. They want the sales tax because it's taxable tangible property and therefore product and therefore taxable. And if it's not, then they want to deny the exemption on the manufacturing. They kind of have to harmonize their thoughts there and say either it's taxable tangible property or not.
In this case, aren't they taking a little bit different position? They're just saying that this is really construction. And there's construction exemption, and the legislature's made it clear that in the construction context, if you want the exemption, it's got to fit here, and that this is really a construction case, not a manufacturing case.
And they say that a lot in the brief. I agree. I think that's part of where that confusion with Ben-Hur Construction Company is a separate entity. Ben-Hur Steelworks makes the steel. They make the steel beams. They make them in a factory. That's traditional manufacturing. A construction company, and I think they use an analogy of a carpenter.
Is there
a carpenter
sale
cuts
from,
it on site.
Is there a sale from Ben-Hur steel to Ben-Hur construction?
There is a transfer of the title of property for that to be installed, but
right.
It is installed on the site. And it's not the same as if you pulled up with your flatbed truck and took the steel with you. The transfer occurs after it's attached and fixed to the structure because of the contract language that's provided.
So how is it different than construction? You're making it for that construction.
EMB Granite found that the fact that it was installed and it's fixed to the real property didn't mean it was not manufacturer of a product.
But it didn't address, in fact, it didn't address product.
It did not. That was a stipulated. That was a stipulated fact.
Right.
But the court did find that the fact that it was installed still provided.
Didn't preclude it from being right.
Yeah, I would just ask that the AHC be overturned, reversed, and refund the order. Thank you very much.
You'll have some time on rebuttal.
May it please the Court, Your Honor.
You may proceed.
The contracts at issue are not for the purchase of a single beam or a single finished steel beam, but instead they are for the construction of a steel infrastructure of a building. And the fact that Ben-Hur may cut some of those steel beams to size, drill holes in them, or do other things in order that they can put them together on the site does not change what they do from construction to manufacturing of a product. Because if that were the case, then really all construction would be manufacturing under 144.5.
Where do you draw the line? How do you distinguish this is construction versus this is manufacturing? I mean,
yeah.
This has got a conveyor belt. Where do you draw the line?
You know, I think actually the legislature drew a very nice line, and that is in 144.030, subsection 37, which so closely describes what Ben-Hur does that it's probably as close as we're going to get. And this is what it says in that subsection. This is a separate exemption. It says, fabricating tangible personal property which is used in fulfilling a contract for the purpose of constructing, repairing, or remodeling facilities. That's what we're talking about here. They're fabricating a steel beam, or steel beams, not just one. We're not talking about a single steel beam. They're fabricating several steel beams so that they can put them together, and they really are constructing. There was no confusion about Ben-Hur Construction versus Ben-Hur Steel. Ben-Hur Steel is wholly owned by Ben-Hur Construction, but still, they're the ones building the infrastructure. But that exemption, exactly described describes what we're talking about.
And, why, and it doesn't apply here because?
They haven't sought it, they haven't sought the exemption under subsection 37 because it's not for a charitable or, you know, it's not a, an exempt entity, which is what 37 applies to. But what it demonstrates is the legislature knows exactly how to describe what they're talking about, but didn't do that in this case. And what they're trying to do is fit a manufacturing exemption into that same sort of you know, square peg or round hole or whatever.
I'm remembering our argument recently where we talked about
we did
the pouring of the contract, and we discussed if it was done off-site, mm-hmm. and I thought you indicated you thought that would be a place to draw a line or be a distinction.
It is a factor. My argument in that case was that it certainly is a factor. It's not the dispositive factor. It's not the only factor, but it is accumulation of things to determine whether or not that is construction or manufacturing. Certainly,
because it was a significant factor, it was done on site. That they poured the walls and
yeah,
stood them up.
That's right. The fact that they poured the walls, that demonstrates much more clearly that it is, you know, not more clearly, but it is certainly a factor in determining whether or not this is construction. Is there a bright line we can draw? I don't think there's a bright line we can draw. That's the answer, I guess. I should have said that initially. I don't think there's a bright line we can draw. There certainly are factors, and being on site is one of those. The evidence in this case is that they certainly could do those things on site. But they didn't. They did them in a facility.
So what are the factors we have here that you say make it, put it on one side of that unclear line?
On the construction side. Mm-hmm. Well, I think the factors are that it is, that they go in and they erect it. We're not talking about a single, like E&B Granite was installing a single countertop, a granite countertop, which is used by an end user as the sort of, if you will, final product. Right. We're talking about multiple steel beams that are cut and put. They are assembled as part of the infrastructure of a building. You know, that's
is this case more like construction or less like construction than Weber?
that's a good question. I don't know. I think it's probably. I guess I would say it's probably. Similar.
It's a different part of construction.
Yeah, I mean, it's a, you know, they are certainly cutting and drilling holes, not at the site, right? So that is a little less like construction. It's a little bit more like manufacturing product. Yet they're assembling it, and not just one piece. It's not like attaching one steel beam to the ground and that's it, and that's the final sort of product. They are assembling it with a lot of steel beams together. As part of the skeleton of a building or a parking
before lot. They're affixed to the building, as your opposing counsel says, the steel beams can be cut up, things can be done, they could be sold, there's an actual market. In the Granite case, the issue about a market was really not raised in the argument, and so the issue about a market, as opposed to the Phoenix case where you built the wall, you put the wall up, and right. You can't market that wall anymore.
Well, and really, you can't market these I-beams. They would be useful for scrap afterwards, and in fact, that's what the contracts specifically provide for. If they're not used as part of that, you know, construction project, then they can certainly be returned, and they can be used for scrap or different things like that. And I suppose in that respect, similar to like the Weber
asphalt.
Case, which is the asphalt, you can certainly dig it up and grind it up and reuse it again.
So your argument is any custom ordered item would not qualify?
No, I don't think that's the argument that that we're making. That is, custom items can be products, and I think that's
true.
And
they have a limited market, but they have a market. The market is you order a custom product.
Right. I agree with that. The custom products cannot. The fact that something is custom made does not mean that it's not a product.
But to follow up on Good Judge Breckenridge's analogy. If she would order a dress fitted to her, maybe that's a couple hundred dollars. I'm not even knowing that. But if they.
We shouldn't talk about prices.
She can get a better bargain.
I'm just saying.
We're just talking about
if she says, I don't want the dress, and they want to cut it up and sell it for something else, it's not worth that money anymore. It's a whole different market.
It could be altered. Certainly.
It's an aftermarket.
Yeah, it certainly could be altered. And like the granite in E&B Granite, that could have been reused for another countertop, and certainly would have had to have been a smaller one or something like that. So it could be reused. And it's true.
Where does the requirement of a market come from? What is the...
The definition of a product.
And what is that? What is that?
An output with a market value. And it is true that there are different markets that are available,
Is that analysis necessary if it's a construction case?
No.
I guess that's my question.
Yeah, it's not necessary.
As long as there's tax laws, there'll be tax planners.
Right. Yeah. It's not necessary. It's not necessary for the conclusion that this does not qualify for the tax exemption on 144.054. And that's really evidenced by, I mentioned subsection 37 of 030, but there's several other statutes, as this court concluded in Phoenix. There's several other statutes in Chapter 144 alone that talk about specifically about construction. And I think one that I'd like to point out in particular is 144.062. And the reason that's important, that one is important, is because Ben-Hur uses it all the time for exemptions. They use it all the time for exemptions. And if this were, if 144.054 were instead the mechanism to be exempt, it would completely undermine 144.062, which was drafted for the purposes of allowing exempt entities to get the materials that are used in the construction of their buildings or whatever they're building tax exempt.
Because ordinarily, they're not.
You go
to the hardware store and buy nails to build your house.
Right. You gotta pay taxes.
Pay taxes. Is the record clear that Ben-Hur does make taxable sales to third parties of these beams?
Yes.
And in those transactions, where does title pass?
Where does title pass? It passes when they
FOB or
when they sell the beam.
But title passes here. Where does title pass here?
Title passes here after it's constructed, after it is installed and made. You know, the infrastructure is made for the building. Then it's passed.
Is there some reason why they couldn't have that same game with a third party? They say, we're going to sell you this beam and title will pass when you affix it to the real estate there. I assume that's a matter of contract.
Yeah, they could do that. They could do that. And I would argue that under those circumstances, title passes after. I mean, they could play that game. It's true. They could say, we've got 50 steel beams that is effectively constructing your site. We're going to sell them individually to you, and title won't pass until they're attached, something like that.
And the hardware store could say, I'm going to sell you these nails, and title will pass to the nails when you bang them into the wall.
Right. And that's a fundamental problem with the conflict that we see with EB Granite, because that was title passed after it was installed. But it is distinguishable, I think, from this case, because we're talking about the contract there was not about building a home. It was about purchasing a granite countertop. Here, the contract is about building. All of the contracts are about building these buildings, building the infrastructure, and that's fundamentally different. And if we use 144.054 for that purpose to reach all construction, we're talking about a lot of things. All homes that are constructed, they could be cut. All that wood can be cut to size, can be drilled, can be hammered in. All of that. And if that makes it the manufacturing of a product, then really all construction is exempt under 144.054. And the legislature, by virtue of the statute, by virtue of the language of the statute, did not intend to cover that broad of a frame.
Is there a distinction? I'm trying to think what they're called, but they're the beams.
The A-frames or the?
Well, where it's the roof beams that are constructed and they're brought in on a truck and they're installed, do you think they fall under construction?
If they are part of a contract to build a building or to build a structure, and title doesn't pass until they're installed or they're part of that, then that is construction. That is construction. If they're manufacturing a product and they're selling it, you know, as part of a market, you know, single items like a granite countertop or something like that, then I think we'd have a different situation. But here we're not talking about a single item, a single steel beam that is being sold as part of a retail market. We're talking about the sale of multiple I-beams that are being sold as part of an infrastructure that is being built, and title doesn't pass until after it is
Mr. Morgan, do you have any idea what impact this would have on the economy if we, on the state's revenue, if we decide to, with the opponent, your opponent?
There's nothing in the record, and it would be guessing, but it would be millions upon millions of tax dollars that would be affected by this. I gave an example in my brief, and maybe it's not a fair example. I know they said in the reply, J.E. Dunn, and I'm not trying to pick on J.E. Dunn, but they're the most visible and obvious large construction companies out there. But everything that they do, because everything has to be modified to a degree. You have to cut to a degree. You have to drill holes. You have to hammer things in. Would change, and that would all be subject to 144.054. So not only would, and it's fair to say, not only would the wood or the steel beams or the whatever it may be subject to exemption, but all of their machinery, all of their equipment, all of their resources that they use, electrical, energy, water, all of that would be completely tax exempt. And that's just not supported by the language of the statute, particularly when you've got, in Chapter 144, so many references to construction, so many references to reconstructing, constructing, and contractor type of language in these provisions, and none of that in Section 144.054. The last thing I would say is Subsection 37 talked about fabricating tangible personal property, which is very aptly describes what they're talking about here. 144.054 didn't even include the word fabricating. It left that out. It omitted that from the statute. I did want to say one real quick note, because 136.300 was raised. That's interesting statute. I can frankly say I don't know what the consequences of or what the purpose of that was, that change was. But I will say that the notion that a tax exemption should be strictly construed predates the passage of 136.300. In the 1940s, this court was applying strict construction to tax exemptions. 1970s, the same thing. So it's not dependent upon that statute. This court's strict construction of tax exemption is not dependent upon the statute, that statute. And so I would say it doesn't really apply in this setting. For these reasons, if there's no other questions, ask the court to affirm the Administrative Hearing Commission in this case.
Thank you, counsel.
Now I have one question. Does Warner Brothers know you're Ben-Hur Steel?
That's a good question. I don't know if Warner Brothers know. I don't think that's in the record, Judge.
So okay.
We'll have to leave that for another suit for another day. Maybe we'll be up here on that issue.
What utility would be left of the construction exemption under 144.062? Why would you ever need that? If your view of this is correct.
I think if a product is delivered to a construction site, say you're building a home, and a product is delivered to the construction site, title's transferred, and then you install, mm-hmm. you modify, you do something to it after the title is transferred, then I think there would be a pretty good argument for a construction exemption there, assuming you fit the other requirements that are contained in that exemption. That's not the situation we have here. These beams are not being taken to the site and dropped and delivered, and then another company coming in and installing them, and then that company saying, I get an exemption. This is the actual manufacturer who's saying that. This is the company that manufactures the structural steel members. They're not I-beams. That's the raw material. It's the product that comes in initially. It's the plastic pellets that are used to make seats. It's the raw material. It has to be manufactured into a usable product, and that's the steel beam. But that steel beam is done when it leaves the factory. Upon installation, but the beam is done in the factory.
Well, why does title transfer upon installation? It doesn't for your other customers.
It depends upon the terms of the contract.
Well, that's my point. So why wouldn't you make that contract with your other customers?
I think because it's a marketplace, not all customers want that. Some customers want title, and it's not in the record why the contract would be one way or the other, but clearly some customers wanted title. They wanted to take it off. They wanted to drive away in their old trucks. We collected remitted sales tax on that. Other companies, in this case The construction company did not want that. They wanted it installed. And the title transfers not to the construction company, but upon the installation to the general contractor. These are all subcontracts. The contracts that are involved in this case is not a contract for the construction of a building. And I think the big general contract is for construction of a building. This is a subcontract for the provision of structural steel.
When you buy that general contract in Benner Construction, right?
Excuse me, Judge?
The Benner Construction is the construction company, though.
In the case of these refund claims, the construction company is Benner Construction Company, which at the time that these events occurred was not a wholly owned entity, or Benner Steelworks was not wholly owned. That occurred after these particular claims were made. So it's a later fact in the record.
Go ahead and wrap up. I don't want to.
Well, I just wanted to address Judge Seidelman's economic effect discussion. That's a decision for the General Assembly. And I think they voiced that very clearly with 136.300 by saying we want strict construction to apply against the Director of Revenue on exemption claims. And that was something they overrode the governor's veto. That's a supermajority. So I think that has some impact upon that. But it is a General Assembly's decision. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. The matter will be taken under submission. Thank you.